Alison Adele Hedgecoke is the author of 4 collections of poetry, including Dog Road Woman, Blood Run, and her latest book, Streaming. She's also a memoirist and the editor of several anthologies, which feature indigenous voices across America. She's the director of the Literary Sandhill Crane Retreat and Festival, and she's been awarded fellowships, residencies with groups like Lannan Foundation, the Weymouth Center for the Arts, and McDowell Colony. Her honors include the American Book Award, 2 endowed chairs, and numerous literary and arts grants. She is a poet, writer, performer, musician, editor, and activist. Alison Adele Hedgecoke, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thank you.
You know, I've been a fan of you. I've known of you and your work since 1996, when I was a student of our mutual friend Juan Felipe Herrera's there at CSU Long Beach. And I'll never forget your reading. You know, the way you opened up your reading with this sort of big howl that you do when you start your reading. And I'll never forget. It blew me away. I was maybe 20 years old, and I was a fan of yours ever since. Do you remember that time?
I remember meeting you. I remembered you all along. Yes, I remember very well. And I want to say, too, that Juan Felipe had also been my thesis advisor just before that. I graduated in 95.
Oh.
And he had been my thesis advisor, so we both studied with Juan Felipe.
Really? Where was he? Where was this at? What was the program?
Here. He was right here at Montpelier at Vermont College, where I'm teaching now. He was right here like 20 years ago.
So you were technically a student of his also?
Yes.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah, I see.
Yeah, I had him. He was my thesis advisor for my MFA.
That makes sense, you know.
He brings us all together.
He does. Yeah, he definitely does. And now that he's, you know, he's the U.S. Poet Laureate, but yet he's kind of been the Poet Laureate of our hearts, right? Those of us who've known him for many years.
So. All along. Yeah. And no better deserved this, you know, place for him to be, because it's all of us.
Right.
He encompasses everything in poetry, so it's a perfect position for him.
I was reading about your book here, about your collection. I was reading an interview you did with the award-winning poet Jan Beatty also, you know, where you talk about the concept of streaming, which is the title of your book, Streaming, and how you say that you mentioned that the idea of streaming, the concept of streaming is something that you've, you know, employed throughout your life. And then you mentioned momentum and migration, things like that. Can you just tell us, the listeners, a little bit more about, you know, this concept of streaming and how it relates to this collection of poetry?
Yeah, there's a murmuration that happens with migratory birds that you might have seen passing by you. So they seem to all move collectively as if in one thought. It's that type of a momentum and that type of a gathering force and drive that I'm really interested in, the physics of that. Some of it has to do with the thermals of air that they're traveling through, and they're following that heat to stay warm. Especially when it's cooler, but it's also easier for them to travel further.
Right.
If you think about it, we're always hoping to go further. So we also have that sort of momentum and drive in us to shift time, shift place, eras in our life, understandings. And I find it really fascinating and interesting. It also connects to dance and to song and so many other things that we connect with as human beings.
And for the listeners maybe who aren't familiar with the, I guess, the phenomenon of murmuration, sometimes you're driving and you see, you know, maybe thousands of these tiny birds that are all sort of in sync, and they're sort of, you know, almost like an amoeba. They're like, they're floating and they're hovering and they're like in a dance together in the sky, and they expand and they contract. You know, it's an amazing thing when you get to see that, you know, and that's what you're referring to in terms of the idea of streaming. Is that correct?
Yes, right. That's part of it. That's a big part of
it.
Right. And also those things that are brought on through being mesmerized or having a muse with poetry, with song, again with dance, with ceremonials. There's so many things that bring us into a cadence and a rhythm where we are fluid and we can sort of transform ourselves and speak in a more intelligent manner or speak to things more clearly, more concisely.
Yeah,
drive the image further. I'm interested in all of that.
I mean, that's what I loved about this collection, but I mean, all of your work, actually, there's always this kind of, I get this sense of this, there's always an intentional, or your eye is, you have one eye focused on ecology or flora and fauna and how we as human beings interact with our environment. And yet at the same time, I never get the sense that what I'm reading is a book of quote-unquote eco-poetics, but it's just that your poems, you know, are about what it means to be a participant on the planet. You know, I think of We have a friend in common also, Jack Collum, who's there, a professor at Naropa in Boulder, Colorado. And he used to teach his students, of which I was one of them. He would tell us, you know, we are nature, right? That the natural world isn't something happening over there outside of us. We are nature.
That's right. We are. We're just little pieces of it. You know, we're such a small little item in nature, but we're all part of it. And I also study with Jack, so we have that in common as well.
Wow. And, you know, that's the sense I get when I read your work is I would never, you know, I wouldn't consider it like that genre, eco-poetics, the idea of, you know, it really, to me, it's what you're writing and the sense I get is, you know, it's just about us as these sort of, you know, amoeba creatures that are just existing in this environment and we're all a part of it and you're making sense of it through poetry, right?
Yeah, it's not assuming nature.
Sure.
It's actually accepting, you know, and knowing that we're definitely part of it, and it is us, and that's what we are, and we can't get away from that, no matter how crafty we think we are.
That's right.
Species, we can't get away from that. Yeah, and it drives us too when we're at work, and you know, I come from a manual labor background, and as you know, do my folks, and it also has to do with those cadences and how we create rhythms in order to sustain ourselves and move through the world in that way in so many different maneuvers and matters of our lives.
I'm glad you brought that up, your manual labor background. You know, I know that one time I recall I posted on Facebook that my mother used to be a farm worker, and that at one point she worked for this program where she would help train farm workers for jobs that would get them out of the fields and into new occupations. And I recall that you replied something that you had went through a program similar to that, I think.
I did when I was in Ventura County, when I left tobacco and sweet potato work mostly. We also did some citrus seasonally.
Wow.
I did commercial fishing and construction. And when I moved to California, there was a program in Ventura County, and I was able to participate in that and segue. I had been injured several times at work and wasn't able to continue that part of my work life. So this was my transition period.
Right.
And something very similar to what your mother taught, I was enrolled in.
Were you interested in poetry even at that time?
Oh, yes. My sister and I learned to write, you know, the letters intentionally so that we could write to each other poems, songs, stories. We were very interested in using language in that way. So we were intentional about learning. I was preschool at the time. And it was just something we always did, but I never really thought about doing it professionally. I did as a kid believe that I would have a book of poems out, and finished my first book when I was in middle school, and an older friend typed it up and wanted me to send it off, which of course I never did.
And
my mother saved it. It still was in a cedar chest years later, and there's threads of everything I do today are already there. The politics were there with Wilmington Penn. And the labor is there. So much of the natural world is already in there. But, of course, it was naive and childish poetry, but the threads were there.
Do you remember the title of that?
Let me think about it. It'll pop in my head. It'll probably come in during the conversation.
My mother always kept, she still does, she kept, in third and fourth grade, I used to have enter these poetry contests or oral recitation contests there in the San Joaquin Valley. And, you know, we'd get like participant certificates and those things. And my mother kept all of those. And now she's like, see, you were doing poetry when you were in third grade. It's like, I love mothers that, for keeping those things, for being the archivist of the family, you know?
Yeah, really. I mean, and through us, they were probably enjoying things in some way that also fulfilled something within them that we were able to create, I'm sure. I think it was titled something like Driftwood. I remember one of the sections is getting in the way of my title, accuracy in titling, and I think it was a section named Pentimento, which has to do with the layers of things that you can't really see, but the apparition is there. It's a painting term, and it has to do with somebody painting over canvas over and over. And we used to find old canvases, and we would use them and paint over them.
Wow.
And so somebody told me the term, and I thought it was pretty interesting, too, that the apparition of it would still be there even if you couldn't see it.
That's amazing how a lot of that, you know, influences us early on and it's still, you know, some of what is informed, continues to inform our writing even now.
Yes. Yeah. We're still working on it.
Yeah. Very much so. We're speaking with award-winning poet, activist, and professor Allison Adele Hedgecoke about her fantastic new collection of poetry, Streaming, that's out with Coffee House Press. And the blurbs I was reading, they refer heavily to the music that's in your poems. One of the blurbs called it a veritable symphony. Another one says it feels as if the poems are singing. And then, you know, I think on page 58, you have this poem that's, I mean, obviously a lot of your language is very sort of musical and lyrical. But on page 58, there's this poem called Twisting the Night Away, where it becomes very obvious. And in fact, I think it feels almost like, to me, like it would be song lyrics. I'm going to read just a quick snippet of it. Twisting the Night Away. How that man in evening clothes got here. Well, you know, feel much better. Sometimes dancing's all we got. Sometimes move with it. We rock. What is it about music that you feel binds it to poetry?
Yeah, it's a good question for me. Thank you for asking that.
Sure.
Because I'm one of those people that thinks in music. So things come to me musically first, and then I usually find the words for them. And I did work as a musician and songwriter for many years. I have a band now still. This is based on, this particular poem is based in the more tornadoes and tornadoes that were coming through where I live in Oklahoma most of the year.
Oh, wow.
And they were really bad that year in 2013. And,
right.
And huge hunks of Oklahoma City were gone. And like 50 people died in an afternoon.
Right.
And we were stuck in bathtubs with, like, a table or a couch pulled over you. And the only thing the radio would pick up was oldie station. That was it. Everything else was knocked out. And, you know, Chubby Checker
sure,
and all these,
yeah.
Like, oldies were on. So it had to, this particular poem came of that, listening to these, you know, the oldies selection and thinking about the twister we were in. And yeah, it's all kind of mixed up with what's happening in Oklahoma. The red dirt is a cultural element of Oklahoma. The music is that in Oklahoma.
Right.
A lot of the news, the way of thinking is considered red dirt. Deep Deuce is where Ralph Ellison is from in Oklahoma City. That's where he was born, in that neighborhood.
Right. Wow.
So all of this was being hit. So, yeah, it's one of those times where you're capturing a moment and in the heat of the storm, really. And so the music carries you through that time. That's all you've got.
Right.
You know, other than the rage of the cyclone, that's all you have is whatever you can pick up.
What a haunting image, you know, you just painted right now as you describe that, the idea of, you know, a twister going on outside, everyone fearing for their lives, you know, sort of taking cover. And then all you have is this oldies station playing Twisting the Night Away.
Yeah.
I mean, that's haunting.
It's crazy, but
yeah.
So, you know, we wake up in the morning and take to ride, and this is one of the poems that came. I worked on it for a while after. There was a set of, like, four of them that I was using for a little suite. And when I started to do this book, this is the last book of poetry Alan Kornblum ever edited, just while he was dying of leukemia. So I got pushed up a year so that Alan can work on it because he was really sick. And we kept the weather band FM AM on 55 and the Twisting the Night Away on 58. And then in between, instead of the other two poems from the oldie stations, I put in a couple of prose poems about climate change.
Right.
And man-made issues, which of course also affect, you know, cyclones and other things that we're dealing with.
And you mentioned that you're also a musician, and I know that this book of Streaming, it has a sort of a companion album also that you recorded with a musician, and correct me if I'm wrong, is it Red Clay?
Red Clay is our band, and that's red like the word reading a book red, or red like the color red, and clay because Red Clay is in Oklahoma, but it's also in places the other two members are from. Laura Ortman is the electric violinist and sound artist in it, and she's White Mountain Apache. She lives in New York.
Wow.
And Kelvin Bell is the guitarist and sound engineer, sound artist in it. And he also has Red Clay in his technology of his life. And so it's Kelvin, Laura, and Allison, Red Clay.
Mm-hmm.
So the KLA is us, but it's also the actuality of what we walk on and what we're making here. So it's improvisational sound art.
Right.
We've all got jazz influence. We all have sort of various backgrounds in music. Both of them are classically trained. My mother was a classical pianist at a boarding school.
Oh, wow.
And so we have all this fusion work. So it's a mix of those things, and we're really improvisational.
Yes.
Innovative work, yeah. So, yes, we made an album, and Coffee House paid for our studio time, and
wow.
There's an Easter egg in the book. If you look between the title pages, there's
yes.
a free download. Yeah, so this month only, like somewhere through December, it cuts out because the book only carries the free download for a certain amount of time. So those that get it now get that free album, two for one.
Yeah, no, so yeah, I want to just restate that. So in case our listeners, that if you buy this book now, streaming, if you buy Allison Hedgecoke's book, you have until the end of December to download the free album that accompanies it, which is a fantastic I listened to the whole thing just as I was, preparing for the interview, and it was just, I've collaborated also with musicians doing poetry and what have you, and but what you, the sort of ambience, the atmosphere that the musicians create, the sort of sounds that come out of this recording as they accompany your own poetry, it's just it's a wonderful album, and in fact, I think it's a steal to be able to download that for free between now and the end of December. So,
yeah,
so go out and get it.
I wanted to give something to the audience. It's my way of putting in a little something extra for everybody,
Yeah, no, that's great. I'm actually thinking of stealing this idea for my next book, so.
Yeah, do it. We need more music in the world. And
no.
It goes well with the poetry. It works out excellently, as
Yeah.
It's all good.
It does.
Yeah,
it really does.
There's some of the most fantastic musicians in New York. Both of them have outstanding, history in their work, but they're also really innovative and love working together. So, yeah.
I'd love to see you guys in performance together. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, bring us down.
I'll work on that.
We're ready.
I'll work on that for sure. And you mentioned, working with Alan there, and I know is this your third or fourth book with Coffee House Press?
It is my third book with Coffee House Press and two anthologies with them as well.
Right, and
so I have some books with other presses too, but I started with Coffee House and I came back to Coffee House definitely for streaming. Yeah.
And how was that relationship there working with Al? And I know, he recently passed away not too long ago, but, I know he's kind of a legend in that, so.
He really was.
Yeah.
He's just, when he took me on, I submitted the book on Halloween of 93, Dogger Woman. And back then you had to wait 3 or 4 years for a book to come out if you were new because they had their cachet of people who were important. So you had to wait your turn.
Sure.
And, so he accepted it 16 weeks later. I had a retainer on it, and I had just started grad school, so I just did new work at grad school and went on, waited my time, and he really took me under wing and told me a lot about the field and things I didn't necessarily pick up. I was in a low residency program. It was mostly about aesthetic, so the business part of it we didn't really get at all, and he was very generous with me about how things work and what I was moving into, and very helpful. His edits were light and adept, and so it was you that he would pull little things in that maybe you didn't see because you're too close to it. He liked to say that, an editor or somebody doesn't let you embarrass yourself.
That's a good way of
Do something when there's something, or maybe draw out something where there's a richness and potential that you're going so fast, you're moving past it and didn't even note that there was a bit of genius there. If you just did a little bit more on that end,
it's
really good for that. And
that's a great way
and then this last one I submitted is two books because it was companion. And so given two manuscripts in person, I had him come and teach with us at another low residency I work at. And I handed him a couple manuscripts when he asked me if I had anything. I said, yeah, it's two new ones. They're companions. I want them to come out one right after another because they're in concert.
Right.
And he called back and he said, what if we do them together? And I wow, that's going to be a really fat book. And he was really helpful with me. We did pull out about 40 pages so that we could take what really fit together like a glove, as they say, and make streaming out of that. And I already had the title streaming from the major part of those two. So we went with that. And, yeah, we worked on it and had a great time together. He was getting chemo the whole time we were working together.
Oh,
he would
wow.
call me from the hospital, and we'd talk about all the things while he was getting the chemo. So we did a lot of editing on the phone.
Wow, that's incredible.
While he was in
yeah.
treatment. It was intense, and
I
he was
bet.
So generous. Yeah, the day I got my galley, he passed away. So
yeah.
he didn't get to see any of this part of it with me. We got it to galley, and he was gone.
Yeah, and what a loss that was. But, you know, I know that Coffee House continues to do all the great work that they've been doing for so long. So, and, you know,
those, and
those kind of informal, you know, mentorships that we strike with you know, folks down our path, you know, I mean, like you had there with Alan, those are so, you know, they're so vital and critical to our whole sort of journey as writers, as folks trying to make books and poetry and put them out in the world. You know, I know that actually, and I know that you're an editor as well. I'm familiar with some of the wonderful books you've edited, such as Sing. And then, of course, one of my personal favorites is Effigies, the 2009 edition there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because
it includes a good friend and great poet, a friend of mine named Kathy Rexford, who I know you've
been with. Yeah, great.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I also realize that you're always, I see you and you're constantly promoting new writers and new voices and young writers. I'm curious to know how much of your role as editor is informed by your efforts as a teacher and mentor.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the same thing that makes me love teaching and want to be working with people's work also calls me to edit. I'm really interested in both having an opportunity to see work come into the world, but also fostering, you know, new generations of writers or pulling together different generations of writers. And looking at those, as they say, those little blank spaces that the field has and peppering them and saying, hey, this needs to be here and let's do this, let's do that. And with the two Effigies editions, both of those years, the amount of male poets who are Native who have books out those years, for instance, in 2014 with Effigies 2, I think there were 9 Native male poets who have books out that year and 3
wow.
Native female. And there's 5 new books in Effigies, so it brought it up to 8
wow.
and 9.
That's incredible.
So each time there's been an Effigies, I've kind of leveled the gender in the field.
Nice.
Because even though there's a lot of women writing, probably more women writing than men
mm-hmm.
in that community, there's not, the publishing field is not as open.
Right. No, that's
and
true.
And tend to really marginalize and or tokenize the female Native poet far more. And
right.
It's interesting. So Effigies is an effort toward that and getting those voices out. And Sing was really about reconnecting with our brothers and sisters all over the hemisphere without the Panama Canal involved.
That's right. Absolutely. Who are a couple of new exciting voices out there that we should look out for?
Oh, man, there are so, so many. I think Jamie Natanaba is a really excellent Navajo poet. She was at Boulder this summer.
Wow.
Her voice is so gorgeous. It's just beautiful. I told her she should tour with us. Her poetry is excellent, and her voice is just so exceptional.
Great.
She's somebody I really hope people keep an eye on. And Michael Watson, his name's coming up a lot, but there's a reason for that.
Right.
He's also doing really incredible work, both creatively and critically. And it's really in there. So those two don't have books out yet, but those are a couple of people, to keep on that line.
Wow. Wonderful. Well, thank you for that. We've been speaking with award-winning poet, activist, and professor Allison Adele Hedgecoke about her latest collection of poetry, Streaming, which is out with Coffee House Press. And Allison, would you do us the honor of reading us a poem from your collection?
Yes, only if you give me a request. Which one do you want?
Oh, you know what? I like She Shakes Chilies from Her Hair. I like that one.
That's been made into an animated film.
Really?
Yeah, so if you put in my name and IMDb, you can pull up a link. And Pixel Farms,
wow.
Motion Poems selected it as a poem that they wanted to work with. And they hired Pixel Farms to come in and do an animated version of it.
Oh, wow.
And it premiered in May at the Walker in the Twin Cities. So you can see it animated.
Wow, that's great.
It's online. You can look it up and find it and watch the animated.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well,
yeah.
Great. So on Poem of the Week, we have Allison Hedgecoke, who's going to be reading to us from her book Streaming, a poem titled She Shakes Chilies from Her Hair.
She shakes red chilies from her hair, waxed black with slight red strands, thick enough to stand. Hold spicy seasoning until we fall. Chilies she shakes loose, caught in leaning against red ristas, hung loosely on rose adobe walls. Summer, we greet our spiciness from time before. Shakes chilies she attracted, red as wasp, something winging while she stands swinging her heavy mane, loosing it from flavor, season, spice in life rife with something only sisters share. Red chilies she shakes from her hair.
And that was Allison Del Hedge Koch reading from her new book, Streaming. Thank you so much, Allison, for being with us on Words on a Wire.
Thank you for having me. It's really great to hear your voice, and thank you for doing this exceptional show and showcasing so many books. You're doing great work for all of us. Thank you.